All right, this is the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, January 24th, 2022, working session. And I am calling this meeting to order at 6:01. All right, roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Here.
Director Booth?
Here.
Director Fumfeller?
Here.
Director Karcher?
Here.
Director Olson?
Here.
All right. Could you join me and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we're going to start off with Tammy Krueger on her Education Showcase. Special Services Showcase. Say that fast five times. Wow. I could get Pledge of Allegiance out. So. It's all yours, Tammy.
All right. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Yeah. So in my position of Director of Special Services, I have a lot of hats. Director of Special Education, Coordinator for Gifted and Talented and English Language Learners. I also support as the Child Welfare Education Liaison, which focuses on foster care, and the McKinney-Vento liaison supporting our homeless population. I thought tonight I would just focus a little bit on special education, but wanted to make sure that you know all the hats I wear in case you have a question in any of those areas for tonight or for another time. So this year, I wanted to start out without, you don't even have to look up there for a second. I wanted to start out just by talking to you about who we added to our team and how grateful we are that we were given the opportunity to add these extra people to support our students. So last year, we had one psychologist intern, and this year, our intern became a psychologist without the intern label, and we added a second, and it's been huge for our district. We've been able to meet the needs of students, and also we've been able to, or we haven't had to, use an outside source to get a lot of our evaluations completed, which has made a difference financially too for our district. So it's been great to have two psychologists support all across the district, and wanted to say thank you for that additional staff person. We also, based on need, this year we needed to add speech services and occupational therapy services, and we were really lucky to find two people in the community who had they're either SLPA, which is Speech Language Pathology Assistant, or they're Certified Occupational Therapy Assistant. And we found two people, one SLPA and one CODA, in our community that came to work for us this year to help us meet the extra needs that we had this year. So that was fantastic. And then last year we made the decision to add a second early childhood special educator so that we have two now. And we have two preschools, one at Running Creek, one at Singing Hills. And now we have the ability to support students and have an early childhood special educator in the building most of the time. One teacher continues to have babies, and so we're down to one right now because somebody is at home. But when she is not at home with a baby, we have two, and it's made a huge difference for our preschools. So just wanted to thank you for those positions. One other thing that we added, and effective needs, which was social, emotional, behavioral program at each elementary last year. And then at the end of the year, we made a decision to add an additional special education teacher to anticipate need, which we already filled that need, really, in both elementary schools. And so we have a teacher in place at Running Creek, and we have a long-term substitute for that special education teacher position at Singing Hills. It's still posted, but we hope to fill it as soon as we find a quality candidate. But we have a great sub in there right now. So those are some additions that we have that are really supporting students.
So long-term meaning they make a commitment.
Yes. Once we get somebody, we'll keep them.
Yeah.
As long as we can.
All right.
So just a quick description of our programming for those who are new and don't know what's happening in every building. So we do evaluate kids from birth to 21 in our district. We have that responsibility. But after May of this year, we will no longer evaluate our 0 to 3. That will go to the Community Center Board, which is Eastern Colorado Services. They'll be taking over that responsibility. And so our early childhood special education team will no longer be responsible for those baby child finds. and we'll be just focusing on the 3 to 5.
Can you just take one more minute and explain what that is? Because many people don't know that we had an obligation to do that and what that looks like.
Sure.
Just, so, it doesn't need to be long, but so that it doesn't, because it's hard to understand that the school is obligated to do what we've been obligated.
Right. So we have part of our team here and then partly a team that's coordinated through us currently goes out and evaluates anybody based on parent request or doctor request or even, you know, teacher request if they're familiar with the family. And they'll go out to the home and they'll do an evaluation, or they'll bring that child into the school or over to see Lori across the way for a health evaluation, vision and hearing screening. And then they determine if the student has a developmental delay, and if they decide that that student qualifies for developmental delay, then services are provided through early intervention. So all of that is still connected to the school district currently, but the state is making a change all across the state that the community center boards will be responsible for those 0 to 3 evaluations, and we will not have that responsibility. We will still have the responsibility to evaluate those children before their third birthday, and if they qualify for special education services at that time, that we make sure they are in preschool by their third birthday. So that will still be our responsibility, but the birth to 3 will now become the community center.
So the services provided will be something outside of the school scope.
Mm-hmm. And we've had Katrina Wall, who you know, she's been providing those early intervention services, and she'll still work with the community center board. So some of the people will still be the same.
So they'll overlap a little bit.
They'll become the responsibility of the community center board rather than the school district's responsibility.
So I'm going to make a statement, and if I'm wrong, I'm going to correct it, but that this is part of a really broad set of changes that the state is making with regards to early childhood that include preschool, but because they're making so many changes to preschool, it affects 0 to 3 as well. And so you'll probably be hearing for the next couple of years, 2 or 3 years, change after change after change that impact either early childhood or preschool, because the changes at the state level are pretty dramatic and far-reaching, and they will be affecting us. And this is just one. This one's really kind of minor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's helpful that we're not responsible, because it took resources to do, and we can devote those resources to other things. But
are they taking away funds or no?
Pardon me?
Are they taking away funds for that?
You mean going forward?
Yeah.
For the child fine?
Right.
They're giving a lot more funds to the community center boards than they did to us.
Okay.
For the same job, which is interesting.
Right.
So
I was just curious if they were taking away funds from the school, even though there's an overlap.
Let me find out the exact answer to that question.
Curious.
I do believe it'll adjust some, because we won't have that responsibility, but it's not.
If we weren't getting a lot for it, we probably will stop getting that money, and the community center board, who will be doing that, will get a lot more than we got to do the same thing.
Right. Okay. And
that's what we think now.
Okay. But I was just curious.
And then that will, when you think about universal preschool, which will be happening soon in our school district, which right now is for those students who are in the year before they go to kindergarten, 4 years old, or, you know, 4 by a certain age, and the state or, you know, IDEA, the federal funds will be coming our way for, I think that's a state decision.
They're paying for, is that what I'm hearing? They're paying, the state is paying for preschool?
Yeah, universal pre-K.
Universal pre-K before.
Not yet.
No. But not this year.
Oh, okay.
That's where they're heading.
Oh.
They're creating a new, this gets a little off track, but okay. I mean, from where Tammy was going, so I don't want to go too far down that, but they're creating a new, I don't know what it's called, early childhood department at the state that reports directly to the governor, consolidating what Human Services, what CDE, and one other agency currently do with preschool and early childhood. consolidating it all under one agency, creating new rules. It's huge.
You think it's a couple of years out then?
Well, the implementation, yes. Yeah. But we're beginning to see impacts even now, either that we can foresee either currently or in the near future. So, and we can, it's not an urgent thing, so we wouldn't give you an update quite yet, and there's not a lot we can do about it. It's, but a lot of preschool services are for special education students. That's why I wanted Tammy to just explain the 0-3, like, why is a school district doing that? Because the obligation to identify students who have special needs is important in order to serve them in those years, mm-hmm. so that they're ready or more ready for school, and the districts, all districts, get funding for preschool students who've been identified with a special need, and so that's one of the populations that we have, I would say, a greater obligation to serve than, say, somebody else who doesn't have special needs. Districts aren't required to provide.
Right.
Services. Universal preschool to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I know. Both my kids were in that realm, so yeah, I'm good. I was just curious what it was all going to.
All right. So just really quickly, other programs that we have. We do have our significant needs programming from kindergarten all the way through to include a transition program still for our students who are post-high school, but still qualify for services. Some of you see the dog cookies that are out, that they have their dog cookie business. They do a lot of community field trips. They teach a lot of life skills over there. If we all get to the point where we're out and about a little bit more, come visit that program for sure and see. It's really great. I think Mr. McClendon can attest to it. All right, we do have also an opportunity program which supports middle school, high school age students who are significant in the area of social, emotional, or behavioral, and that is also off of a campus next to where the Aspire program is, and supports currently 7 to 8 students, depending. We have one student in the in-between right now, between high school and the opportunity program, so... we have 2 teachers over there and a social worker full-time to support those students who have that high need. So that's one other...
They're recommended by the principal, or how do they get into that program from the high school?
Yeah, so we do take some out-of-district students if they qualify, and then also from the high school or the middle school, they would just complete a packet that would include... all information, all interventions that have been tried, and what has worked and what hasn't worked for that student, and then determine, like, what are their needs, what needs can that program meet better than, a general education classroom can, and then we look, sometimes we do a trial for a student to have them over and see if it seems to be having a positive impact before we determine if they'll be there, for a long term. But at the end of each semester, we look at those students individually and determine, should they stay for the next semester? Should we spend more time in the general education classroom, either at their home district or in one of our home schools, and then move forward with making adjustments if we need to.
And is it true that all of the students in that program have IEPs?
Yes.
So it's a kind of more intensive support and intervention for students in IEPs than can be currently provided in the schools.
Yeah. So I just wanted to give you, there's information in your board packet that you can dig into as much as you'd like, and I'll just show you quickly what's in there and then what you can do with that, and then give you the, how is our administrative unit doing? So several years ago, we did not consider ourselves our own administrative unit. We were working with East Central BOCES, and they were the umbrella that we were a part of, and then when Kim Morrison, our previous director, came on board, she worked really diligently and and partner with Jeannie Boyce Wiley, who is still our special education director consultant, so that we could become our own administrative unit and support our special education needs on our own without being in conjunction with East Central. So that means we get our own grade rather than being a part of that whole umbrella. So I wanted to show you what that means and give you just access to more if you so want it. So what happens is each year the state is graded on all of these factors, and then the state determines which factors they're going to look at for the administrative units, which administrative unit is the same thing as our district. And we get a letter that states, here's what we looked at this year, and this is how you did. So what I wanted to show you, this is in your board packet, and you can click on anything that has an underline here. And these are all of the indicators. On this side, the indicators that go with results, and on this side, the indicators that go with compliance. And if you decide to click on one, you go to the CDE website and it tells you more about how do they look at that indicator and determine if you are up to snuff. So this year, 2021, really quickly, this letter is also in there, so if you wanted to read it in detail, you can. The most important thing that this letter says is down here at the bottom, that based on an evaluation using the criteria identified above, CDE has determined that Elizabeth School District meets the requirements. So last year, they chose only compliance because of what was happening with COVID and how assessment results weren't available. So it will tell you that they looked at 4A, 4B, 9, 10, 13. If you go back over, you can see what those are. So they looked at suspension expulsion data, and they also looked at, I should have split my screen so I could see. That was 2020. I went back in time too far. So they looked at significant discrepancy in the rate of out-of-school suspensions, expulsions, whether the AU had disproportionate representation by race, ethnicity, and so on and so forth. I won't read all of that to you so that you can look at that if you'd like to. What you can do is go below and see the matrix, and then see where the points were earned, and then see our lovely 100 out of 100 meets requirements. So what I did do is I also put the 2020 in there for you because that shows you more, because they also looked at results that year. And then you can see our current determination also in 2020 was meets requirements. But if I scroll down, you get to see more for the AU determination to include the results matrix. If you are a data nerd and you want to spend a lot of time looking at all of this, I attached for you an AU determination guide so that you can spend all the time you want looking at each little box and indicator and then find out exactly what that means. So have at it if you'd like to. If you want to stick with meets requirements, you can. But if you want to know the details for how we get our determination, all of that information is here. And then if you go back to this document, you can click on those things and go out to CDE and see what it is exactly that they're looking for. But we continue to do a great job with results, compliance. It'll be interesting to see where we are when we get back into looking at results again. But we have a great special education staff that's working hard on behalf of all of our students, and I'm really proud to be in this position and support them and support our students. Thank you.
Tammy, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
The two psychologists that you have, is that specifically for SPED?
Yeah, so okay. Both our psychologists are paid with, you know, either federal funding or special education funding, so they do dedicate their time to mostly special education. and they can support with MTSS or response to intervention, and provide ideas for intervention and brainstorming, but they're not able to meet with those students and pull groups with those students.
Right. I was just curious if we had any psychologists on staff for like high school, middle school, or do you know?
Only counselors.
Only counselors. Okay.
And then we do contract out with a outside licensed family and marriage counselor, and we have been able to dedicate some of our title funds to that person who is able to provide some services for staff and students and families as needed.
Okay. Nice. Thanks. Thank you.
Any other questions? That was great. Thank you very much, Tammy. And that is really good to dig in. You know,
if you decide to dig in and have any questions, I'm across the street.
Okay.
Come on over for some coffee and conversation.
We'll do it.
Be happy to have you.
We'll do it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, roll call.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Yes.
Director Olson?
Yes.
All right, can I get a motion to approve the minutes of from the Board of Education meeting January 10th, 2022?
So moved.
Second.
All right, any discussion? All right, go ahead with the roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Yes.
All right. All right, now, next up is communications. We've got Brett, who's going to talk to us about some proposed new courses for 2022-23.
Where do you all want me? Do you want me here or do you want me here?
Oh, no, sitting
wherever.
Down. Sitting down.
Sitting down,
well.
Okay.
Turn.
Well, that's all right.
Thank you.
I have a face made for radio.
The blue light.
Yeah, you could be the blue man.
Before I get started, I do want to say thank you to Kristen for getting this to you so you have an opportunity to kind of review the proposed courses for next school year and beyond. All of these courses, with the exception of two, were proposed by staff. And I'll kind of go through and highlight some of the ones that are potential certification, which means potential additional funding for the school district. Last year, we were able to get $26,000 roughly through the state CDIP program, which helps continue to fund some of the programs that we've got, some of these courses. Some of the ones that have been proposed have the potential to continue with that in addition to what we already have. There are also several dual credit courses that are on here that we would be teaching at the high school. So kids would be able to come out not only with obviously high school credit, but credit particularly from Arapahoe Community College that we pay for. And with these, with the addition of these courses, plus what we already have on hand, potentially 3 years down the road, we could have kids that are walking out of Elizabeth High School with a high school diploma and upwards of 24 credits toward a college degree.
That's awesome.
So, and we're not done, but this is just kind of a start. So just a few of the things that I want to touch, that I'll kind of highlight for you on the courses themselves. Western Civilization 1 and 2 are dual credit courses. They will be taught by an Elizabeth High School teacher who meets the ACC requirements. In addition to that, on the second page, Literature Through Film is another one of our ACC dual credit courses, as well as College Algebra and College Trigonometry. All of those taught by Elizabeth High School, current Elizabeth High School teachers, that in addition to what we already have, will provide students with an opportunity to get college credit as well as high school credit. So we're pretty excited about that. We have some certification and potential certification courses. So I'll go back to the first page. River Science is a certification course. At the end of that course, students can take a test, and should they pass that test, have the potential to have a certification in river ecology, which in turn provides additional funding to the school district to continue to fund these kinds of programs. Digital Photography 2 has the potential. We're working on that one. I'm not real sure yet. We've got some things we need to iron out. River Science is a guarantee. Digital Photography is kind of up in the air at this point. Culinary 4, internship. That students would have the opportunity to earn a SurfSave Food Manager certification. Again, that's one that qualifies through the state CDIP program. So that, you know, a student comes out with that certification, they're able to go into a kitchen and demonstrate right away that they have the skills to be able to help manage a kitchen situation. Again, benefit for the student, benefit for the school. And then you'll notice toward the bottom of page 2.
Brett?
Yes, sir.
On that one, is that taught by a...
Yes. Those are all Elizabeth High... Okay. Every class on here is taught by an Elizabeth High School teacher. And then Automotive 1 is kind of on the wish list, if you will. But
kind of on the
well, it's on the wish list that I'm really, really pushing for.
That'd be awesome.
But we have to start somewhere. So Auto 1 does not get certification, but as we progress, hopefully next year I can bring you Auto 2, the year after that Auto 3 and Auto 4. By the time we get to Automotive 3 and 4, students should have the opportunity to earn ASCE certifications in certain areas on automobiles. So that's the direction we're going. So no certification yet, but that's, you know, I'm hoping 4 years down the road I can say, hey, we got this many certificates to demonstrate what our kids can do, help them go out and get a great paying job if they want to right out of high school, in addition to providing a benefit to be able to continue to sustain and grow programs like that through the state CDIP program.
I have a question.
Yeah.
On these dual classes, are, like, for example, if auto mechanics was to be there, is that something anybody can take, or does it have to go towards college? Like, if you have a kid who's not college bound, for example, and they just want to take auto mechanics so they know some stuff about auto mechanics, mm-hmm. which I think everybody should, honestly, is that something that they can take?
Yeah, oh, anybody can take it.
Oh, okay.
Now, with the specific dual credit, so like literature through film, there is a requirement. There are criteria that kids have to meet to be able to take those. Same with Western Civ 1 and Western
right.
Civ 2. Automotive, at this point, we're not affiliated with anybody.
Right.
But if we would affiliate, like with Arapahoe or Red Rocks Community College, a different school, kids would still be able to take it, even if when they finish, they've got their ASCE, and, hey, I just want to go get a job. They can do that.
Right.
They'll have a college transcript.
Right.
Whether they choose to use it or not, completely up to them.
I was just curious. You know, like, in general, I think an auto mechanics class is great for, you know, just like a general finance class and all that home ec and all that kind of stuff. So it just
look above. We have consumer automotive, which is, I think, kind of what you're talking about, Director.
Okay, and yeah, I don't have, for some reason, my list doesn't have half of them.
In communications?
So
oh,
look, it's fine.
Well, anyway, one of our courses that we're is consumer automotive, which is, I'll read it, but designed for the student who owns or wants to own a car for the everyday driver. Students will learn how to change a tire, jumpstart a car, etc. General vehicle maintenance will be covered.
Okay, so that's
so,
more what I
yeah,
was
and that's
about.
In all of these courses, but for those dual credit courses, are open to any student in the building.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, there might be a grade level requirement, but no special requirements to be able to get to that. So the reason I bring this to you today, February is the month typically when counselors start going out meeting with kids, give them course ideas, talk to them about, we're going to be doing registration at the end of February, 1st of March. So if we get approval, our counselors can then, potentially as early as next week, start going into freshman classes and then sophomore and junior classes to tell kids, these are the courses that you are eligible for. We can get them registered. The goal is to have all of our students registered by the 1st of March. Then the counselors can start building a schedule for next year, saying, all right, so, excuse me, we need four sections of Automotive 1 or whatever. And then we can start kind of putting those together. Then before we go to spring break, if we see needs, particularly if, and I say if, I don't think it's much of one, if Automotive makes, we can then really start looking for an Automotive instructor. Kind of working on that already, but nothing set in stone. But then we can start advertising for positions that we need, if we need them, you know, obviously with Douglas and Ron's approval. And then we can hopefully come back from spring break and continue the hiring process. So we're, you know, I'm here today hoping that we can get this going, so that we can start making sure our timeline is set and we can get everybody filled and in place. You know, I always like to try to have everybody by the 1st of May. Doesn't always happen. Lately, it's been a lot better, thankfully. So that's kind of why I'm here and why I'm asking for your support on these courses, so we can get moving forward.
If there aren't enough students that to sign up for a course, we wouldn't offer it. But this is kind of the fuller menu, and then depending on the student interest would be whether we offered it. So, I mean,
correct. Hypothetical,
if nobody's interested in automotive, then we don't offer it. But we already know that a lot are interested.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe there's another example, but I don't want to.
It's that way with a lot of our classes, even the ones that are already on the books. If we don't have enough enrollment in one area and we have an overload of enrollment in another and we can switch resources around, we do that. We try to provide the most bang for the buck, so to speak. And so we always look at that. This will be no different. So you could approve all of these courses, and in theory, or, you know, in practice, only six of them actually are taught next year. But they'd still be on the books and would still be an option for down the road if there is a need, and then allow us some flexibility in being able to build a schedule that serves our students in the best possible way. Before I finish, I have one more comment I need to make in regard to this. I just found this out today. I'm not even sure Mr. Bissonnette knows. You know about our internship program, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so in late December, a couple of kids, one of whom went to CASB with you, expressed an interest to Mrs. Cook, our internship coordinator, about doing some work in government. So Mrs. Cook put together a proposal to the governor's office to see if we could get some kids that could intern there. That proposal was accepted. We're going to have two kids this spring interning in the governor's office.
Awesome.
One day a week.
Awesome.
So just thought I would share that. I mean, when Leanne told me that this morning, my jaw hit the floor. I'll be honest, she wrote a great proposal, but I thought there's no way in the world that's going to happen. And by golly, they said yes, and so...
Was Pi involved?
Most likely. If it's Leanne, Pi was probably there.
That's an inside joke, so for those that don't know.
But at this,
She provides Pi sometimes, yes. That helps.
Food is a good thing.
Sorry,
yeah. It's always right.
Food, yeah. Help, it works.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, so Junior Carly Pronsky and Senior Natalie Yates have been approved to participate in the...
Natalie may take over.
Yeah, she might.
She might take over.
And we've got a few things to iron out, but the governor's office did give us approval to begin those internships, and each of the girls. So what it'll probably be, and again, we're ironing out details, is one Tuesday. So like Tuesday of one week, it'll be Carly. The next week, it'll be Natalie. The next week, it'll be Carly. So that they're not missing too much school, because they'll be gone all day from the building. So They won't miss everything, so we're still ironing out details, but I thought that's pretty doggone special. You guys should hear about that.
That's great.
So, anyway. So I will be happy to answer any questions you have. Yes, sir.
On some of the very specific classes, I'm thinking of dance and auto mechanics, and I think culinary probably taking over. Are our facilities good to go? Should that...
For the most part, yes.
Okay.
The one, and you mentioned it, automotive, that's going to require some additional work on facilities. I have begun conversations with Douglas that should this happen, what do we need? And so we've started those conversations so that, you know, if you guys approve and we know, say, before we go to spring break, we got a full automotive, all right, I get a teacher hired, and then we start going with whatever the facilities would look like, and what do we need? You know, we need cars, we need tools, we need a shed, we need a classroom space, we need fencing to kind of keep all that. So we can begin that process March, April, so that by August, we, you know, hopefully we should be up and running good
cool.
to go.
Good.
But for the rest of these, we're in okay shape.
Okay.
Are we giving up? This is a lot. Right?
Yes.
It's a lot. What are we giving up to accommodate these?
That depends on what kids select. And in some of these, as we move forward with like changes in graduation requirements, you'll see a difference. So, for example, Western Civilization 1, Western Civilization 2 could replace, and eventually will replace, most likely for some kids, world history. And the same kind of thing with some of our literature courses, literature through film, and the ones that we're teaching right now, those would replace or could replace Lit and Comp 300, Lit and Comp 400, potentially some of our AP courses, that, you know, like AP Language or AP Lit. Again, a lot of that will be dependent on what students select. So we really haven't whittled a lot yet. And I think, but we've never had, in my time, we've never had a list like this big, that teachers generated. And so we're going to see, and I may be coming back to you saying, here are some courses we would just like to phase out over time. So we're not there yet. I think part of that is we're in a what's going to happen mode and get a better feel for what do kids want to see, what do kids want to take.
In response to the question about resources and facilities for this, and specifically automotive, I don't know if you recall that the board's decision to direct Frontier proceeds to the high school to support these kinds of things.
Right.
So one of the kind of bittersweet aspects of the original offer falling through, but then getting a new and better offer for Frontier was the timing of this, and the timing relative to getting some programs up to speed. And you know, for a high school student, you got 4 years, and they pass, and if we can't provide an opportunity, it's, I think, why we have 8 to 10 students in the CNA, even though it's not leading to a
12.
Certificate. Okay, that's great.
Sorry,
good.
Sorry.
Good.
Two things that I didn't get updated on.
Sorry.
That's a joke.
I'll fix it.
Okay. That, you know, they wanted the class, they wanted the learning, and they didn't care that they weren't going to get their certificate. And so this, you know, they wanted to act now. So we'll just, that's something that we're trying to sort out is, do we have the resources to stand up what we would need first semester for the automotive program? And we don't have an answer to that, but we're in discussion.
Do you want to ask yours first?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just made a couple of tick marks on just questions that I have on these. And a couple of, they just concern me a little bit, and maybe it's the wording, it kind of helps me by understanding that it came from a teacher, which is cool. I think it's great that they're being proactive with this. But the art through the ages, the art through the ages.
Mm-hmm.
how can I kind of get a better description of what that means? Like, students will critique, analyze, and understand their own works in the context of historical movements.
So, and I'm going to try to explain what the teacher and teachers, because there is a history teacher and one of our art teachers who came together to develop these. So what the goal is, to have students in each one of those. So you have let's say you have a group of 10 kids, and 10's just nice and round. So 10 students in the art through the ages history course, and 10 students in the art through the ages art course. So in the history course, they're learning like the Renaissance, they're learning, oh my goodness, now all of my humanities training is going to fail me, but different periods of art through time. Then what they will do in the art classes is try to reproduce a piece of, they will create a piece of art in the style that they are learning. So if we're talking Renaissance, they will try to make a painting of their own that is in a Renaissance style or a Rococo.
Their own painting.
Yeah, their own painting. They will create their own piece of work trying to emulate what the Renaissance masters, how they did it, the techniques that they used in the Renaissance. Okay. Or, like I said, Rococo, or if you want to go into the modernist era, you know, Picasso and that kind of thing. That's the goal. So we learn about the historical context of art, and then we create our own art in that historical time set, in that historical realm.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. Thank you for that.
Well, I hope I got it right.
Yeah, well,
I think I did.
You know, it's recorded. So.
Oh, well, yeah, if I didn't get it right, I will have the teachers in question make sure they can provide a better answer.
Hard time.
No, that's all right.
Second question on the career mathematics.
Yes.
These are presented at an introductory level, and the emphasis is on application. But there are topics like algebra, geometry, statistics, and graphs. So aren't we already teaching those?
Yes.
At a detailed level, not at an introductory level.
So the way our current mathematical course or curriculum is laid out, we do a lot of theoretical mathematics focused on one topic. What the math department is wanting to do is to integrate topics into more of a real-world scenario. So instead of I'm just learning algebra, I'm learning algebra as well as statistics, as well as some geometric concepts, and then how do I apply them all together? So it'll be much more real-world. So I know that I'm going to say two words that every math student hates, and that's word problems. But figuring out real-world scenarios, and all right, in this, if I give you this scenario, where do you use algebra, where do you use geometry, where do you use statistics or trigonometry to put all this together? So it's much more of an integrated approach. Instead of we teach algebra, then we teach geometry, then we teach algebra 2, then we teach precalculus, then we teach calculus. Instead of that progression, it's kind of a little bit of all of it at the same time. And as people progress, the details of the algebra and the geometry and the statistics all become more complex, but within that same working unit.
Okay. All
right. That's good. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
And actually, I'm just a little bit of a clarification. So you had mentioned like the Western civilization courses replacing history courses?
Replacing our current world history, potentially, yes.
Okay.
For some students, not all.
But that means is that they might prefer to take Western Civ versus...
Correct.
So we're not getting rid of world history?
No.
So they're getting more of a choice and choices.
Correct.
On which...
Yes.
Great.
And getting credit for Western Civilization 1 and 2, dual credit for
correct.
Those,
yes.
Not for world history.
That is correct.
Could you hear that, what Carrie said? Said that they'd be getting dual credit for the World Civ, where they wouldn't be getting it for the
World history that we currently history. Teach, correct.
Yes.
So,
I didn't quite understand what the international relations is. I mean, I pulled it up online as to some definitions of it, and I was a little, I don't understand what it is.
Well, I didn't write the course proposal, so I will do my best. It's designed to look at a more modern approach to what's happening in the world in relation to what's happening between countries. So how do the actions of one country impact the actions of another country and vice versa? So how do countries interact? How do democracies interact with other democracies? How do democracies interact with other countries that are not democracies? And how do the actions of those countries affect everybody else in the world? I think that is the goal of the class, is just how do countries interact together, and more from a when I say modern, there are a lot of different examples. You could go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so what were the international implications there, allies, things of that nature? Analyzing that more from how did the nations react to each other and their policies versus just the history of an event.
So how does that... I'm thinking international politics is basically what it is, right?
So yes, I think
politically how they relate to each other or how they communicate to each other. And so what is the objective of that one then for the students?
I think, and again, I don't have the specific write up. I think it's just to see how do different countries interact. In different situations.
Perspective of both sides, or is it...
Carrie, I can't answer that question. Okay. I'm sorry.
Do you have a concern?
Well,
if either of you have a concern...
No, I don't think I have a concern. It's just that I want to understand it. And, Kim, brought up a good point. And
I would have a small concern myself just on the direction that it's being brought. I mean, you have a curriculum, you have an...
I'm trying to find
syllabus.
A blank page
Thank you.
To take
Thank
notes.
You. A syllabus. Kind of the direction of the class. I mean, depending on how this is being taught, it is a college course. And I think I'm just assuming, but personally, I'm assuming everybody's on the same page as we want to know what direction that's going to go. Because at the college level, it tends to go... certain directions. We just want to see broadly kind of what the protocol and what the syllabus would look like.
Just the impact to, what the syllabus looks like maybe.
To our students.
What is it going to look like for a student? Why would Carrie want to take that class?
Sure, absolutely. And what I can do, I can go back to the teacher who developed that, who presented this course, and I can get with her and say, the board would like to see a syllabus. The board would also like to know what direction you're going to go and what kind of curriculum materials you're going to use. And then I can get that to you as soon as possible.
And even possibly a text, because if we know what textbook or what's being used, that can
They're
be very helpful
thinking
too.
About that. That would be pretty helpful.
I don't know that we've selected any. Well, I can tell you, we haven't selected because we haven't bought.
Right.
Because I wasn't going to buy anything until I knew what we were going to have here. But I can certainly provide you with examples of potential texts that you might be able to look at and make a determination. But I can start working on that tomorrow morning, hopefully get something to you Wednesday, or get something to Douglas that he can then disseminate if that's how you would prefer it. So I can get that as much of that information to him as possible and then get it to you guys.
I think just a little bit more.
I wanted to just make a comment about a little bit more. Is that, a teacher that's teaching a class is going to develop a syllabus that takes a lot of time and is quite detailed. And that is not appropriate at this point in time. But it should be enough to talk about what are the, like you began to articulate, Cuban Missile Crisis, what are the major kinds of I would say we could say if it's recent historical kind of context, you know, okay, Cuban Missile Crisis, and then even just like, okay, what are the lessons there? I mean, there's a number of different ways you can go with that. And what are some of the other important recent historical international dynamics that would be then delved into versus like a full kind of treatment?
Oh, yeah. No, no.
That the teacher would traditionally develop when they create their syllabus.
Right.
So if you think about it maybe as a high-level syllabus,
yes.
That would allow the board to see the general direction and some of the kind of, you know, the intellectual content.
Absolutely.
That would be there.
Right? I think we can do that. And my guess is she's already thought about quite a bit of that.
My guess is that.
And so I don't think it'll be any kind of a problem to be able to provide that kind of information to you.
But to make sure that they don't...
Right. It's not going to be like on September 3rd.
Yeah, we don't want to get into
tests or anything like that.
No, we don't need any of that. And then the alternative education classes, are these just... if these don't make it on or...
No. So within our alternative program, instead of focusing on like some of our more...
Are you talking about the kids like who came over from Frontier, maybe?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So what is the political civic engagement class? Is that something we already do?
That one is more about social movements, civic engagement movements like... I know Mr. Payton had talked about some examples from Colorado. And I can't recall exactly what those are. A lot of these are much more specific to focus on things that we already teach. So, for example, the ancient world, the medieval world. Those would be taken in lieu of a particular... In lieu of, for the alternative kids, world history.
Okay.
With more of a focus on that. The Cold War, same thing as it relates to potentially world history, or that could even be U.S. history, depending on what a student needs. Same thing with architecture, national parks... Geography of money, I think geography he's looking at that. Instead of world geography, students may take this as a way to, you know, learn some of those five key themes of geography in the city, just in a different manner.
Okay.
That's kind of what they're looking at in a lot of these, is the ability to be a little bit more flexible with what we're teaching that might be of more interest.
Or a little bit easier for them to understand?
Potentially, yes. Not easier as far as content or as far as what we need and expect from them, but maybe a content that's a little bit more focused that you can do a little more with. So if a kid's really into knights, you know, we can really spend a lot of time on knights and medieval, you know, medieval history, as opposed to, and stories of that history, as opposed to, we're going to run from Mesopotamia to Egypt to Greece to Rome, you know, all
so
of those.
So these are the ideas that teachers came up with for the alternative education classes.
Absolutely, yes.
So what would be, I guess, I just would want maybe a little bit of information on that political civic engagement.
Absolutely. I can get with Mr. Payton and... we'll kind of do the same kind of thing we're going to do with IR.
Yeah.
And we'll do the same kind of thing here.
The goal with the alternative classes is to have them be, and I'll use two words, either more practical or relevant from the perspective of interest versus conceptual. Because that's where students who either struggle at the high school now or in the past were in Frontier can struggle. It's especially... courses that have historically had more of a college prep focus. You know, and a lot of the state standards have had that. It's kind of preparing for continued learning about these. And alternative students, they either want, like, stuff that they think's cool, so the example of knights, you know?
Right.
Or there's another class that we've taught that's, like, weapons.
Yes. I can't remember the name, but... Yes.
Right.
Mr. Payton has taught a course on weapons throughout history.
Medieval.
He starts at medieval, you know, and even prior, and then just works throughout different
more
weapons.
Interest.
I think a little bit of risk, but it's not a big one in making this comparison. It's kind of like elementary school and dinosaurs.
Right.
You know, and elementary teachers at every level want to teach about dinosaurs because kids are fascinated by that.
Right.
But we really can't have, like, you know, dinosaurs in first grade, second grade, third grade, whatever. But it's that idea that at the high school level, there are certain topics that really ignite the imagination
right.
of alternative students. So, and sometimes it's just like, how does this relate to my life?
Right.
Or it might be not, you know, medieval knights doesn't necessarily, but that it's more, it's much more interesting and engaging. For
no, I totally get, and I love that we have those alternative classes because not everybody relates the same way and not everybody learns the same way. So I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
But I will give it to Mr. Payton tomorrow, and I'll have him kind of give us a more detailed write-up so you guys can have a much better idea of what that means. And I'll get that.
And I don't know if both of you know Mr. Payton, but he was a social studies teacher at Frontier.
Yes.
And he was one of four teachers. So he taught there, and he's one of the two teachers now that is teaching a number of the alternative classes. The other teacher, I don't know. Lori Horton. So there's two teachers that are teaching some specific classes designed to be kind of a different approach for students that aren't succeeding with the traditional approach.
Sure.
And it's been working.
Yes, it's been working.
Do we have any crossover?
I'm sorry?
Do we have any crossover? I was just curious. Like of the regular high school students? Students, you know, taking some of the alternative classes, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily.
Okay,
not
at this point.
We've been...
But the other way around is true.
Yes, we have a lot of alternative kids that are out taking other courses
The
regular population, so to speak.
Okay.
But right now we have... I believe we have 34 students that we classify as in the alternative program.
Okay.
And so... that's what these are primarily geared to.
Right. Okay.
All right. Brett, thank you very much. That's
you
know, I thought it was interesting, and I thought...
Good ideas.
I had to ask...
No,
a couple of those
fine.
Questions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I do have one more
question. Do have one more?
How many of these new courses, coincide with the homegrown town initiative?
Several.
Yeah.
If you look at... Excuse me. The Western Civ, kind of in a way of being able to offer more dual credit courses. The Digital Photography 1 and 2, Career Mathematics, Technical Mathematics, Consumer Automotive, Automotive 1, Culinary 4. So a lot of those stem directly from the work we've been doing with HTI.
Thanks.
And let me attempt to articulate kind of three threads that were in what Brett was talking about, because depending on your interest and your focus, you might think of HTI as one thing or two things, but there's college concurrent, so there's some college concurrent courses here. There's more kind of career-oriented courses, say like auto mechanics, and there's a third, which is...
Certification, yes.
Thank you. Yes. Certificate classes. And some of the certificate might be, you know, combined with more career-oriented, but there are career-oriented that aren't necessarily certificate. A kind of half example would be the automotive before they get their certificate, right? Or the CNA before they get the certificate. So those are the three things that are all part of HTI. But HTI is also has a reach beyond those three categories, which is represented by this list, which has kind of two sides to the same coin. One is the student side, which is expanding the offerings for students that might fall into those categories, but I think there might be things on this list that don't fall into those categories that are kind of more relevant, more engaging for students. On the flip side is opening up what we're teaching to teacher interest and kind of an ongoing ability for teachers to say, you know, I'd like to teach the history of cars, right? I love cars, but there's an interesting story you can tell about how cars both drive and reflect what's going on in society, blah, blah, blah. And then we see, okay, that's, you know, meets whatever test at the school. We offer it, we see if there's a student interest, and that might not directly fall into those three categories, certificate, dual credit, or more career-oriented, but it does kind of meet both a student interest as well as a teacher interest, because sometimes when the teachers are teaching something they're really passionate about, it can be their favorite course. Mm-hmm. It can be something that, in, you know, like other things, really what engages a student that helps them be engaged in general. Because, you know, they're not all, students are not engaged in all of their classes to an equal degree, and sometimes they're not engaged in their classes, they're engaged in performing arts or athletics or some other activity, and that's enough to really kind of spread to the overall engagement. So there's a, that's a broader goal of HTI from a student and a staff perspective.
Art Through the Ages history and art class are a perfect reflection of that. You know, those students that really love art, and we have several of them, this is an opportunity to kind of marry those two things, to learn about the different styles from a historical perspective, but then in addition be able to practice that and be able to demonstrate that. So HTI is a big focus, but it's also an opportunity to really kind of expand opportunities for kids that we just haven't been able to, and hopefully we will. If they're approved, we'll put them out there and see what happens.
Great. How many kids do you need for the classes?
It varies. On average, we're looking at 8 to 10. But some of it depends on what we have in a teacher's schedule. So a teacher teaching history courses, depending on selection throughout the department, may have an opening. So and so we may put in a class with 6 if it's warranted based on an opening, or we could say, you've got that open block, instead we're going to have you do a study hall. Well, so then we have to kind of weigh what's more beneficial in the long run, the study hall, and it could be, or having a class of 6. You know, depending on the course. So, for example, like Spanish 4, you know, do we have an opportunity to teach that? And if so, you know, is it only 4, 5, 6 kids? Is that more beneficial to those 4, 5, 6 kids than study hall? And we kind of weigh those out.
Well, I'm interested in river science. Mm-hmm. That sounds interesting.
Me too.
That sounds really like
it doesn't say fishing science.
Oh, it doesn't say entomology is not included in that.
Well, are they going to have guest speakers at that?
They might.
They might.
They might.
Cool.
That's cool.
All right. Thank you very much, Brad.
Thank you. And I will get that information to Mr. Bissonnette as soon as I can.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
All right. Douglas, you are up for the superintendent.
Okay. Let's see, a couple things. One, it's not just Heather that would have received by now the message that we sent out to parents. You should all have it now.
I got it both ways.
You got it both ways? Okay. And we've reached out, and we always reach out, depending on the nature of the message, to Legacy Academy to see if they want us to send it to their parents. And so I'm waiting to hear. In that case, we would need to just put a preface, dear Legacy parents, this message was sent to district and Legacy admin wanted to share with you. Thank you, Brett. You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
And that the numbers don't include Legacy, because there's numbers in the message of number of individuals who came into the schools in the last 3 weeks with COVID, and things like that don't reflect their numbers. But they often like their parents to see those messages, so I'm thinking that they will. And then we send it, it depends, sometimes I will rewrite a message and send it to staff. In this case, and in probably 3 out of 4, just say to staff, dear staff, this message was sent to parents. So that was also sent to staff. The main messages in the email are thank you. We've made it through this dramatic increase in cases nationwide and in Colorado. We knew at the start of the school year or the start of the semester that they were going to be going up. I don't I don't know that anybody imagined they would go up to the extent that they have. You know, if you look at any of these line charts, you know, it's just mind-boggling the number of cases. If you look at maps that show, you know, number of cases per state around the country, you know, where like this dark purple is like the most. I mean, the whole country is the same color.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's especially interesting when that's layered next to a map that has different colors for vaccination rates. It doesn't matter the vaccination rate, it's just exploded. The good news that, you know, from a school perspective and from my perspective is that the country, not every state, but taken as a whole, is starting a downward trajectory, and so is Colorado. So we're not over this dramatic increase yet, but it's headed in a downward direction, and that's good news. In addition to that, we're seeing fewer students and fewer staff.
I'm actually surprised at how, I don't want to say how few, but I thought based off of the numbers around the country, we would see record crazy numbers in our school. And I guess I'm just a little shocked. Shocked we have it.
Yeah, I think that it's... people will have different interpretations of the numbers. So I don't want to say that there's just one interpretation.
Right.
And that it's yours or mine.
Right.
What I did say in the message is the number of cases that we've had in January is equal to the number of cases that we had in the first semester. But that's, I mean, we knew that it would be a lot more, but that's a lot, right? What we had over the course of whatever, 4 months, we had it in, you know, 3-4 weeks. What I'm trying to convey in the message is a sense of appreciation, especially to our parents. It's not, I mean, we serve our parents, we serve their children. Those are our main customers. And our staff are absolutely important, and our staff have been essential in getting through this. But without the support of our parents, we wouldn't be here. You know, and one of the things in the message is that they've communicated with us, primarily to Lori, but also to the schools. And they share what's going on, and that's helped us a lot. And they've kept their kids home when they're sick. Sometimes they come to school with some Tylenol, or they come to school and we send them home. But that's really been more the exception than the rule. And we've had to take fewer dramatic steps to stay in person, to keep things operating, than I thought we might have to. We were prepared for more. And so, for me, the message is intended to be one of encouragement. Not that, like, we're done, but we've made it through a really difficult time. And we did it together. It's the staff, it's the students, it's the parents.
It's the bus drivers, the poor bus drivers.
Yep.
This last week.
Yeah. So, like, today we had somewhere between... could you say that louder?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is recording.
I think we had 4 or 5 bus drivers out today versus...
10.
10.
Right. And 10. You know, some people jump to the conclusion that those are all COVID-related. I can't say that they are or that they aren't. I don't know, in part because people deserve their privacy and all that. But all of the absences haven't been COVID-related. I mean, there's a crud going around. I think we shared a message with you about that went to parents. You know, what we did with the buses on Thursday and Friday was we just combined students from different routes onto one route, changed and adjusted the times. We did have students arriving, 15, 20. There's probably some that arrived more than 20 or 25, but the reports that I got from the schools and from transportation was that most of the students that were late were, you know, in that range of 10 to 20 or maybe 25. And I don't know the total number of students. I was told as we were going into it that it might affect between 100 and 150 students. And I know that there were some parents that didn't get a message or that got a message and their students, in a sense, missed the bus. We did send around, I know, at least once, a bus to either get kids picked up that hadn't been picked up. We didn't have a lot of parents bringing their students like early. We didn't see a big increase in that.
I think with the information that was given, I think most people were like, you probably did the best you could do because virtually, you know, half the bus drivers, what do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so many choices.
Right. And there was, in some circles, a presumption that they all were giving it to each other, and that's not accurate. I mean, Lori is still trying to assess when you know, you and she has all the data, and we share it with the county public health. You know, we say, okay, there's this many cases at a school. And we continually look for connections between the cases, you know. But over and over again, okay, there was this one in first grade, there was this one in fifth grade, there was this one that was a staff, and we continue to look at what are the connections and what's the possibility or likelihood that they got from each other. And many of the times, either there's no connection in the school or they tell us, and many of them tell us what's going on. And often it's either in the household or because they hung out a lot with somebody outside of the school. But as I mentioned in the letter, there are, you know, I think three or four that are most likely that they got it in the school environment. And it's almost always because they've been together close for a long period of time. A long period of time is hours. And what's been encouraging, though, is that it's really limited to that. So, for example, we had a couple of teachers that met all day on the first day back around a small table. And one had it, didn't know it. Next day, it was positive. And then a couple of days later, two of the other people at the table got it. But other people that were in the room didn't get it. And then the students that they worked with over the next few days didn't get it.
Right.
As there was a lag in the staff who then later tested positive, they were with students and they didn't, until they knew, that it didn't spread beyond there. And so we've seen very limited, when there has been, it's usually related to people spending a fair amount of time and often it's talking. And to me, there's a lot of encouraging news in what's happening. So that's the point there, as well as making available, Jason really wanted to make available the resources that we have, you know, the media link with the link. He's had a lot of irons in the fire, and he's it's not up and running. But we hope that it will be up and running in the next couple of days, that we'll have my messages over the past couple of years. We'll have links to written materials and then some links to some videos that have helped illustrate some of the concepts, as well as just a kind of introductory text of, you know, here's what the resources are, so that anybody that wants to can dig further into.
Have we gotten more kits, the COVID take-home tests?
Yes. Some of them are right over there, but we have over 5,000 rapid tests.
Great, because I know we were a little shy.
We were. We made it. We gave everybody that needed a test. In the first 2 weeks. The first week we were like, okay, the second week of school we really had to improvise, and then last week we did get more tests, and then today we got even more.
Great.
So
Because I know you were checking Amazon. You were checking Amazon as we were here last time.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. That's right. I mean, it's been a daily.
December 13th, right?
Yep.
Then we would have them.
And there's still one shipment that we were supposed to get weeks ago that we still haven't gotten. And I just haven't had time to follow up with them
and say,
where is it?
On the railroad tracks.
Right. Yeah.
It's Los Angeles on the railroad tracks.
Holy smokes.
That's crazy.
Have you seen that?
Oh, that's crazy.
They're taking all the
shipments. So there were two, actually. They did an initial shipment that was before Christmas that didn't arrive. And when they acknowledged, they beat CPHE testing unit. Then they made another order, and that one hasn't arrived.
Right.
And we got, they've sent it to be shipped, and then we don't get it. So, and they probably don't have, they haven't been able to tell us where is it or anything. But we're participating in three different programs that the state has. The state has a number of programs, but we really, all of the at-home testing programs we're participating in. And it's weird, but they do have three different at-home testing programs because we found that that's what works best for our families, is the ability to have the rapid tests, to have access to the tests when they want, as quickly as they want. Because the problem with other testing programs is that you have to wait for them, and they're not convenient if you have to come somewhere at a specific time and all of that. And so what's been great is that our parents communicate the results, especially when they're positive. And then we do share all of that information with the county public health. So I think that's all I wanted to report on the testing, on COVID. Today, the number of absences was really down from last week, both for staff and for students, except at one school where it was but the overall trend is down. I didn't provide, and I know I'm just trying to add to what was in the message, attendance rates for students, and I don't remember the exact number, it was 91.76%.
That's dead on.
Dead on? Okay. Yeah. For the last 3 weeks, that's down like a 0.75% from last semester.
92.52, August through December.
I would have expected a bigger drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you look at the total number that have been out versus, I don't know, that's what, 8.5% or something like that. Mm-hmm. The total number of COVID cases relative to the total number of either students or students and staff is less than that.
Yes.
So it would make sense then that there are other absences for other reasons. But I was glad to see. I didn't know what those numbers would be when I asked to pull them up, and then we compared them, to pre-pandemic. And so the pandemic numbers are, I guess, a couple percentage points below pre-pandemic. But, it's kind of...
So that shows it's not really affecting our students overall.
Right, not at the level that you might think. I mean, even that I would think, being involved day to day and hearing what I hear either from a lawyer, from schools or whatever, and reading the press, when I see, half the kids are gone, whatever, it's like, okay, what's happening in our schools? That we do see more people staying home, which is what we want, because they're sick, which didn't happen pre-pandemic. And, I don't know, hopefully people are more in the habit of staying home when they're sick. And we've really tried to organize to accommodate for that. Or if they have COVID in the household. And so those are the two categories when we say don't come to school or don't come to work. You have it, or you have it in the household. But if you've been exposed otherwise, and unless there's a reason where you believe it's high risk, and people will come forward and say, I think that it was, I probably should. We've been very accommodating. and say, okay, yeah, you're right, you probably should stay home. But other public health, we'll call it low risk exposure, we're not excluding kids from school because we did a lot of that in the 2021 school year. I say a lot of that. We excluded over 800 kids from in-person learning for a period of time because of
exposure.
The protocols
yeah.
that state public health had put in place. And Lori says, you know, there were one or two that had COVID. And so there were 798 that were unnecessarily kept from school, meaning that it was a huge disruption for them, for their family, for their learning. And the whole intent was that they not spread it, but they didn't have it to spread it.
Right.
Because they hadn't gotten it. So yeah, I don't know about you guys.
Pardon? We in the private sector, you know, I've had employees that, I was exposed. I need to stay home. Am I supposed to stay home for 5 days, you know, and get paid for it? You know, and kind of get that excited look in their eyes. You know, it's just kind of gotten to that point, I think, a little bit where people, we want them to stay home too if they're sick, right?
They're really not, sick though.
Yeah. If you have symptoms, stay home.
Yes.
If you don't, you know, but you have a family member that has it and you've been exposed, if you don't have symptoms, you can come into work. And it's worked fine for us.
Yeah, one thing I am, you know, we personally experienced, and I know several people that have experienced it as well, is that, you know, you'll test on the at-home test, you will test likely negative until you're a good 2-3 days into mm-hmm. it.
Yes.
And then it'll come back positive. So I'm wondering how many people see that negative test and just assume, you know, they're all clear. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once they're kind of on the mend, then the positive comes in. But that's what I experienced. That's what I've been hearing and have friends that have experienced. So just a heads up on that.
Yeah.
The test, you'll likely be 2-3 days into it before you test positive.
Agreed.
So let me, and maybe if you could try to
turn the camera a little bit. So,
I'm going to be speaking in very layman's terms, but I think nobody will have any issue understanding the basic ideas, and it's what you were just talking about. And the shape of that curve may be a little bit off, but it's good enough for this purposes. So what Rhonda is saying, and what we found, is that rapid tests are effective in this range, in detecting the virus. And they're a yes, no. It's binary. And so you may have the virus early on, but the rapid test won't pick it up. Or you may still have it at the end of the infection, but the test won't pick it up. The PCR tests measure differently. They measure like viral load. So it's not a yes or no, it's not binary, it's a number. And so the PCR, let's see if I can get a color that works here, will pick up everything in this, right, a little bit earlier and a little bit later, because it's not a yes or no. It'll tell you a number, kind of a viral load. But the problem with the PCR is the timing, is that, one, you have to know to go get it, and it takes turnaround time. And so that's where, you know, public health kind of has sent, in a way, some mixed messages. It is more accurate because it's giving you a number, what's that viral load. But in terms of practical purposes, it may not be timely enough to give you the information that you need and to take action based on that. So one of the things that the CDC said that was got them in a bit of a kerfuffle when they shortened the isolation period from 10 days to 5 days, they said, if you have, after 5 days, you've been positive, and you have no symptoms, you can return to work or whatever and wear a mask. But they didn't say you needed to test negative. And so the medical community, members of the medical community, protested and said, how can you have this protocol without the negative test? And they came out twice with a response to that question. The first was, because the rapid tests aren't reliable. It's like, oh my goodness, what are you saying? And a few days later, they were pressured to kind of re-examine, and they stuck to their guns and said, we're not going to say that a test is required at the end of that five-day period if you have no symptoms. And they clarified the issue with the rapid tests, which was to say that the rapid tests weren't designed for the tail end of an infection. They were really designed for the front end, and that the reliability here didn't really have the kind of the reliability wasn't strong enough to put that requirement in place. And they were challenged to say, well, or is that just because you don't have enough tests? Because the presumption was you're not requiring them because you can't provide enough tests. And I think that, you know, whether or not that accusation is valid or not, I think that their explanation does have some merit in the sense that it really wasn't designed for the back end. And what we have seen, and I don't know if you've seen this, Rhonda, is that you do get people that have no symptoms for a number of days. They feel fine, and they're still testing positive. And so we've had to deal with particular situations here to say, when do you come back as a student, or when do you come back as a staff member, because it keeps testing positive. And so we really respect that, whether it's a parent or the staff member, what their final conclusion is. If they don't feel that it's right to come back, then we usually respect that. But we also, people that have had a mild, sometimes the reaction is just a couple days, 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. And they felt fine. We will typically say if it's positive, still on day 5, wait a day or two, and then let's see what happens. And we have allowed people to come back after, say, 7 days, if they're still testing positive.
If they feel fine. Because there have been studies that have shown some people, for whatever reason, will carry that, the positive test or something within their system, test for quite a while.
Right, and we don't want to keep excluding them because of that. So it's really a case-by-case
situation. I mean, they're not running a fever. They're not hacking up a lung. They're not, you know.
My dad tested positive for 4 weeks in a row.
See?
After he
initially
got diagnosed.
And you're not, there's no way you're contagious that long.
And that's where the CDC's comment about they're not reliable enough, I think that's where it came from.
Yes.
And that it's, you know, some will show a negative. I mean, we have staff, and I know more about the specifics of certain staff members because, they have to report that information to us in a little bit more detail. But where, you know, initially the rapid test had a very strong line,
yes,
again it had a very strong line, then it was really pretty weak, and then it disappeared.
Right.
And so,
these are all new tests, correct? I mean,
yes.
This is not something that it changes.
No. These are new because we did the same thing in the beginning. We were not feeling well, and we're like, we have one test left. Let me just see from when we had ordered forever ago, and I swear we both are like, is that a line? I don't know if we see a line. I don't think there's a line. You know, it's like pregnancy test. Is that a line?
Yeah.
And we were like, I don't think that's a line. I think we're seeing things. Like, we couldn't even, like, we're like, no, it's probably nothing. But then as we got a little worse, and we, luckily, because my son was sick, so we kept him home anyways. And then we're like, okay, as we got a little worse, we were like, okay, maybe we should take a test. I mean, like, 2 minutes. It was like, bing!
Right, you don't have to wait 15 minutes.
Oh, no, it was I was
sometimes
like...
over here, it'll take the 15 minutes to show up, and it'll be very light. And, you know, that's where Lori is very helpful, talking with
the
individuals.
She was very helpful. 4 days later, she was a test, and then it was like negative. We left it out for an hour and a half just to make sure. Don't throw it away. You never know. And you know,
you turn, and it goes positive. Yeah.
Right. I don't know. It was different, so I was like, okay.
Don't touch it. Leave it.
Don't touch it. Just leave it there. Come back
an
hour later. Yeah. How we breathe.
Okay. Cool.
So
thank you for that update.
Yeah. So that's and you know, if any of you need tests, we have tests. The new ones we received are different than the ones that we've been receiving. It's a different approach. Instead of a cardboard that you put the swab into and then close it, you put the swab into a little like vial that has a liquid in it. You stir it around and you kind of use it like a squeegee. You pull it out and then you take that and you put it into a thing. It's more complicated. It's not as easy. It's got, you know, one or two more steps.
It's like, oh, that's something. What if I spill
science
it on the
project.
Way?
Yeah. Yeah. Science project. It's, right.
I had YouTube the first one, you know, to see, because I didn't think the instructions were real clear on the one where you slip the swab in, and so I YouTubed it.
Yeah, especially the first time.
Yeah.
Both of the tests are like, okay, what am I supposed to do?
But you don't want to mess it up.
After you've done it the first time,
yeah,
I think that the other that's a variation in reliability is, and we don't ever do tests for people, but if they wanted to use, for example, tests here at school, which is what we were doing for the second week in January, we had the bulk tests that we were able to make available to staff. So they can come down, is, you know, whether they stick that swab far enough and, right, it's just like, you know, I've been around people that were positive, and I've been in close contact, and so I regularly test, and it's like, you know, I don't know whether it's sinuses or whatever it is up there, the membranes, it's like, oh, no, here it comes.
And then you start crying.
I think that generally the whole process has given us a whole lot more information than if we weren't able to provide the test and people weren't communicating. Is it perfect? Probably not perfect, but it's, I think overall, you know, people are interested in knowing and having the information and being able to then make choices based on that. And you know, our parents especially have been so cooperative, and our staff too, with it. And anyway, I think there's a number of signs that are encouraging. I'd like to talk about two other things. One is the calendar. I know it's on the agenda later as an action item, but I wanted to give you an update of what you have in front of you so you have a few minutes to think about it before you get to the action item, rather than bringing it up during discussion. Which you're free to talk about it under discussion, but there are two changes to what you have in front of you now from what we sent you whenever we sent you something on Friday or whatever. And they're small changes, but they are nonetheless. One was basically a mistake on one of the calendars.
Staff. I think it was the staff.
We had the parent teacher conference page wrong in the listing on the right. I think it said that the 12th and the 13th.
Yes, and it should have been the 11th and 12th.
And should have been the 11th and 12th. So that was an error that one of our staff picked up when we distributed to our staff. And so we changed that. Okay?
Okay.
Right? the bigger point being that conferences, parent-teacher conferences, next year in the fall would be on Tuesday and Wednesday night at the secondary. The elementaries would do that, but it's a little bit more. They schedule it. It's not a everybody in one place. The other is spring conferences, and this has been a topic of conversation in the spring every year, that conferences are on a Wednesday and a Thursday, and that the Thursday conferences are really poorly attended. And what happens is that staff end up sitting around waiting for parents that mostly don't arrive. So it's not the best use of their time, because they can't really dedicate themselves to something else, because they're having to be in a place, and you know, they can't, for example, go and necessarily talk with a colleague about lesson plans or, you know, departmental assessment or whatever they might want to talk about for the next semester, because they need to be available for the conference. So we're just listing parent-teacher conferences for Wednesday, and it would be Wednesday afternoon and evening on the 15th. And if anybody needed or requested a conference on the Thursday, then we would accommodate that, but that it would be a work day for teachers primarily on Thursday, and that they would have more freedom to do other work on that day rather than kind of sitting, waiting. And they try to be productive, but it's hard to do that. And so that's the other change. And we, so the message went out to parents under my email. I got no responses, except out-of-office responses. But there was no comment or anything, because that really is the easiest way for people to respond. They just hit reply and there you go.
Yeah.
So there was nothing.
Nice.
And then on the calendar feedback email, nothing. Now it's not surprising to me. We don't typically get a lot of comments back. We typically get one or two or maybe three, but given that we send the message out to like 2,000 people, one or two or three is typically what we get back. That we've got none. That's
good.
So we will continue to use this process where we do put it in front of staff at least once. I think they put it in front of them twice, and parents at least once, so that there is an opportunity for people to take a look at it, ask questions, and express any concerns. And it was a staff member that picked up the error in the fall conferences. And you just never know what they'll see. So that's
good.
That's what's here.
She has her spring break.
Yeah, that's so right. Yeah.
She's like,
yeah. My vacation is.
She's like,
So,
cool.
And I do want to comment on the flex day, especially for teachers. That's a result of not having to work on the Friday before Christmas. And then, in essence, giving them the opportunity to get credit for that work with other things that they're doing. Many teachers come in before their contract to set up their class. Teachers will meet with colleagues to plan. There will be interviews that teachers will participate in for new staff during the summer. There are a number of things that teachers do that they don't get paid for that are, in a sense, things that everybody does. If a teacher does something that might be committee work that's only a few teachers involved in, then they would get paid for that. So it's meant to be flexible, which is why it's flex, but the accountability would be as simple as possible. It probably would be at the end of the year when they check out, it would just say, when did you work this flex time? And here are five or six categories of things that would apply for most teachers. So it's not an extra day for them. It's shifting from that,
giving
that Friday.
Them for other days work. And,
at the bottom of both calendars, it says, every elementary student is scheduled to spend a couple.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
That's a formatting error. So we can tell you what it would say.
A couple of dollars for candy?
Or for flowers.
Flowers. For Mother's Day. It's appropriate.
Couple hours massaging.
It's a good catch.
Yeah. It's associated with the orientation and assessment days on the 15th, 16th, and 17th. Every elementary is scheduled to spend a couple of hours at the school prior to the first day of school on Thursday.
Okay.
Is that?
I'm pulling it up right now.
So this is in an Excel spreadsheet. And it's really hard to get the formatting with numbers and text and all that. So thanks for pointing that out.
And I'm not typically the detail guy, so that's kind of amazing that jumped out at me.
Put yourself in the back.
Well, you just never know.
Well, it's at the bottom, you know, and you kind
of. No, that's why we really try to get it in front of a lot of people, because people notice things, and we can put it out, and then we have to. Here's an updated one, and you send this to every parent, and then you find out that that's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially some of us, we've looked at it so much.
Yeah.
That it helps.
It's hard. Yeah.
See what it was supposed to say. And then the last thing is that we're working on a proposal to add a new position for the district that would report to Ron Patera to take some of his responsibilities and give them to someone else. His job has become, and I don't know for how long, an impossible job. So he's got the district financials, and the district has a huge budget, and we have a small staff that support that, but that's one of his jobs. The other is to oversee facilities and maintenance, another is to oversee transportation, and another is to oversee food service. And the needs, especially of facilities and transportation, both from a staffing as well as a kind of capital and planning, requires an incredible amount of work. And some of it is unpredictable when you need to deal with something. And it's proven to be incredibly difficult for him to focus on his main responsibility and the thing that he really adds the most value for the district, and I would say tremendous value, is the financial stewardship that he provides. And he has an amazing history of doing a good job with that, along with these other things. But with the additional grant and grants from ESSER, which is not only a lot of money, but also a lot of paperwork, if you think of the things that, I don't know exactly which meaning, but you know, we're going to be spending over $400,000 on new buses, we're going to be spending over $400,000 on 15 HVAC units. Just those two efforts are huge. We are struggling to find a second mechanic to repair buses and to find a long-term solution.
Automotive One.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been talking about an apprentice program, so you know, you probably didn't say it fully in jest. I mean, there's probably, right, some truth to that, but that takes time and energy to make that sustainable and to have a real impact. And, you know, he'll be here at the next regular meeting and be able to talk about the two aspects of the need. One is, like, day-to-day operations and just the volume of work, like putting the CNA program together and the modular. I mean, it was more work than anybody expected, and that's why Brett was kind of hinting at the automotive program and an awareness. Like, if we're going to do this next fall, we need to get on this. It's not as complicated, it's not as challenging, just from the facilities perspective, because there's a lot more details to the CNA program and supplies and all that stuff.
Where would they even host that, though? Or the auto mechanics, like facility-wise, is
it's not been decided, but tentatively it would just be on the north side of the high school, where the CNA modular is.
Oh, okay.
So if we were to go with a modular, it could be put next to that modular, where the cars would be,
right?
Where tools would be.
Right. You know, that was more what I was asking, because I remember.
The north is what I've heard so far. But there's also a lot of strategic issues related to transportation and to facilities that need attention. And frankly, it's difficult for and difficult for Ron to do it. It's difficult for me to do it and to do it well. We're in the process, I think you know, of an update to the facilities master plan that really only focuses, not I shouldn't say only, but it primarily focuses on enrollment and population and those projections. What does that versus an in-depth examination of our facilities? But the facilities needs are large in terms of like their numbers and in terms of the cost and the constant reprioritization of those. And with a view towards the long term, or I should say the medium term, the foreseeable future. Because one of the things that we really haven't engaged in is try to do planning beyond what we can foresee. But the ability to even plan for what we can foresee is being challenged by the volume of new courses and continuing to make temporary improvements, but also looking at when do we need to move to permanent, because both for the nursing as well as for automotive or anything else we do, what are the longer term solutions? We believe that we could hire someone for automotive that would do things like we often do them, which is kind of on a shoestring, and if you just give me this, this, and this, we can get a program going. But that's only temporary. So what we'll be doing is developing a job description that articulates the responsibilities, both kind of the day-to-day operational stuff plus the strategic aspects. And then Ron will be able to talk more specifically, because these are things that he's been doing. And so he knows them all too well. And I can tell you that when he and I talked about this, I could visibly see a weight lift from his shoulders, because he wants to dot the I's and cross the T's. And he has learned about wastewater treatment facilities. He has learned about all of the things that we've had to do that he had no preparation or training to
easements,
do.
Commercial real estate, I mean the fire system, fire alarm system,
all of these things. And it's not just Ron Patera, anybody, but especially the way that he needs time to do all that. And we've just reached a point where nobody, especially someone that's escapable, has time to focus on the big picture, deal with the details, and cross all the T's and dot all the I's. And that's been a stress that is really too much to ask of anybody to do all of that. So that's why it would be important for you to hear from him. But what we'll do is bring this job description and then he'll be able to talk about what it would mean for the district, both financially, organizationally. The district did in the past have a director of operations and had a number of them. But that position, along with a number of other administrative positions, was eliminated over the last 15 years. And so that's the basic idea, and I just wanted to present that to you and let you know that we'll be here and Kim will be here as well. The feedback from staff about the proposal has been kind of like, yep, that makes sense. So, for example, folks at the schools, they see the benefit that it would be for them to get their issues addressed, because there are issues that aren't getting addressed. They just don't rise to that priority level. So, especially the money from Frontier, as we, because that's for capital. So we're beginning to get some quotes for things. The field at Running Creek, it's like, ooh, it's a big price tag. And how do we think about that, not just near term, but over the long term? And to be honest, you know, it's just, it's not doable. Mm-hmm. And I think that Ron adds so much value to the district with its financial expertise, and that's essential for our both near-term and medium-term success. So, anyway, happy to answer any questions if you have now. But as I said, Ron will be able to explain more, and we'll have something in writing. We'll get that to you before the board meeting, so you can take a look at it and see what it would have been.
That's awesome. I'm craving to talk about this a little bit. I don't know how long ago it was, but Ron and I met because I was working with Wells Fargo at the time. Came out to do a presentation to Ron to take over the investment side of for the district, and the two of us that came to do the presentation were just blown away by Ron's knowledge and all the hard work that he put in. There wasn't a question that we asked that he couldn't answer. And I mean, it was just like that. He knew it. He knows this work. And I just think the risk is not worth it, you know, by not looking into something like this. So,
perhaps that fall, I wanted to thank you for your flexibility with the budget revision, because that's kind of, there. It's not ready to the standard that we believe it needs to be presented and approved by you. And it needs more time. And so the special meeting next Monday, unless you decide otherwise, we'll just be focused on that. So it will be shorter. But then you could, all the time that you need to understand that revision and all the time that Ron and his staff need to finish it up. I mean, they've been working on it for months, but there's just a lot of double, triple checking that needs to happen. And
changes come down.
So I appreciate
all that, yeah.
Your flexibility in scheduling.
I know Rhonda said she was really excited about coming next Monday.
Rhonda was? Uh-huh. Okay.
She was excited.
That's...
all right.
Thanks again for your patience.
I think your presentation and words were so awesome. All right, move on to the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve 8.1 through 8.5?
So moved.
Second.
And roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Protocol.
No.
Yes.
No discussion.
No discussion
for consent.
I knew that.
I saw how okay. smooth you were.
Yeah, huh? I just transitioned right in. Okay.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Frumfeller.
Yes.
Director Carter.
Aye.
Director Olson.
Aye.
All right, we're going to move on to action items, and I would like to get a motion to approve the 9.1 approval of District 22-23 calendar.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? We'll make the corrections that...
No.
Yes. Oh,
I wasn't able to pull it up on my phone, but I'll make the correction. I believe it's at hours.
Director Black, but I just want to thank you for supporting the changes. These were, many of them were driven by staff. I think, I know that they'll appreciate them, and I think that students do, and maybe even parents, right, with a little bit longer time.
I think so.
I know I got feedback from an employee that was just thrilled about it and is even more thrilled that it's in place for this coming.
Okay.
So. All right. Roll call. Any other discussion, comments? No? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Yes.
Director Kronfiller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. May I get an approval? Motion to approve. 9.2, approval of District Accountability Committee.
The membership.
Yeah, the membership.
And I just wanted to make a quick note here. We do have a parent identified for Running Creek while we were in the meeting that you responded and confirmed. Okay. So I will update you on the name for the document that you're going to sign.
Okay. So before they make the motion, can you give that name?
Yeah. Her name is Danielle Mottinger.
Nope. Nope, she's wonderful. Former student.
Nice. Okay, so
so they need to do the motion in a second.
Yeah. All right. So do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? No. Roll call, please.
I just want to add, especially for new members, that the District Accountability Committee is a quote-unquote advisory committee to the board. They have a set of bylaws, and part of those bylaws include that you approve membership. So it's not a...
Anybody can get on.
Yeah. Right. So the intent by the state is that the, at least 50%, but even more, would be parents... Because it's supposed to be parent representation, and so that's why you approve it, is that the people that are interested and the people that are in a sense nominated or whatever are presented to you, and then you say yes, we're good with that, and then they in a sense are appointed. Hopefully, they serve out those 2 years. The accountability committee during the pandemic has not been as active as normal, so this is kind of getting back into their old routine. And one of their main things is to review the draft and recommend a budget. So Ron gets with them to do that. They decide whether they'll do a survey, or any other tasks that you would like to have them consider taking on. But I think this year would be push that. They have to operate somewhat like the board in terms of protocols and open meetings that are open.
How often do they meet?
Pardon me?
How often do they meet?
They'll meet probably three or four times this school year. Hmm. Probably three. When they've been put into place at the start of the school year, they might meet like one more time or twice. First semester, and maybe only 2 times in the second semester. We'll just see what their interest is in a bit.
The first meeting is February 23rd.
All right, great. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Yes.
Director Kronfiller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Yes.
All All right, a motion to approve 9.3 ELAT grant 2022-2023 submission.
So moved.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Second. Yeah, that's correct.
Second.
Okay.
And you seconded? Yes. Okay. Any discussion? All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Yes.
Director Frumkler?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Yes.
All right. No discussion items at this point. And so our Board of Education planning, special meeting on January 31st, 2022 for revised budget. Douglas talked about that. Do I need any protocol around that at all, Douglas?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
Well, there's just one procedural note around special meetings, is that the agenda cannot be amended at the meeting unless everyone is at the meeting.
On the 31st?
On the 31st. Okay. Now, it may not need to be amended, but it's important to know that it can only be amended if everybody is present. That prevents, you could say, mischief making on the part of boards, that they schedule a special meeting, somebody's not there, and then they add something to the agenda or whatever. And it's meant to really make sure that all board members can have a say in what's conducted in special meeting. So if this is the only agenda item, then it's like no big deal. But I want to, given this is the first special meeting camp like this,
right?
We did have another one, I think, for the real estate.
But being a Zoom, would consider four board members there, correct?
I think so. I think that
that was one thing that they allowed, that they changed to allow, given COVID.
Yeah, and that's still in place. I doubt that that will really change back.
Okay, all right. And then our next board meeting is February
14th, 2022. Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Day after the Super Bowl, too.
Wow.
Well, go Bengals.
So.
Go Chiefs.
Oh, snap. Go Bills.
Douglas, I'm going to have you at my
They're
house
gone.
Because we don't have Dish. We have Dish Network, and they don't have ABC, I think, or NBC. And so we have to watch it in Univision. And so we had to watch the Kansas City game last night in Spanish.
In Espanol.
No way. Do they get as excited about things as
they do? Those announcers are awesome.
I have Dish and I watched it.
No.
Do what? No, but did you watch it on, like, AB? Or it was broadcast on NBC, or, and they're having an, a
it was
fight.
On CBS.
Or CBS.
But
yeah. Was it on CBS? No.
No, no, no. But who's your provider?
Dish.
Dish.
You have Dish or Direct?
Direct.
Oh. Really? No, she I spent
she's got the premium version.
Yeah,
she must, because I spent an hour on the phone with them saying, okay, you guys are having a financial fight with them. We can talk about this later, but then they were having an argument with them, and I said, well,
what?
So what channel? Oh, you can watch it on channel 838.
Yes.
So we had to watch a Bronco game on that channel once, and for the same reason. So we're going to be looking at Direct.
Rush up to your Spanish.
Yesterday's That's game was on CBS.
But if you need to come over to my
the
house.
The regular season one, yeah, it wasn't.
No, that's right. That's right. All right. Okay. Sorry about that. We digressed. We don't have any executive sessions.
All because Kim mentioned Valentine's Day.
Well, we're just going to love on that.
We are going to love the day.
We will take care of that. We're going to celebrate anyway over the weekend.
Right? Absolutely.
And so with that, I adjourn this meeting at 8:05 p.m.